So here on Daf Hey Omid Aleph, we're talking about a case of a Korah that's less than 10 tefachim high. Right? It's a very low mavui. And we introduced the concept yesterday called Chokikin Lahashlim. That what we could do is we could dig inside the mavui and depress the mavui so that now we'll have a distance of 10 tefachim between the bottom of the mavui, the floor of the mavui, and this korah that goes on top. And on that we're going to have a machlokas between Rav Yosef and Abaye, which is in addition to the other machlokas that we had between Rav Yosef and Abaye about the case where we had to add something and lift up the karka because the korah was way too high, it was above 20 am. And now we're having a machlokas between the same Rav Yosef and Abaye, but not about a korah that's too high, but rather a korah that's too low. And instead of lifting up the karka of the mavui, we want to now depress the karka of the mavui. So let's just see where we're up to here on Daf Hayom and Aleph. You'll see the two dots approximately, I'd say, just roughly 15 lines down from the top. Hoya pachos me'asor tefachim. So the korah now could not be matu the mavui because it's lower than 10 tefachim in its height. Ve'chakak bo, he digs into the karka la'ashlima la'asora, to make sure that it has a distance, a height of at least the minimum of 10 tefachim. And the Gemara asks, kama chokek? How much does he have to dig? So the Gemara answers, kama chokek? You're asking me such a silly question. Kama ditzorachle? That's you measure the height. You know how much you're missing to get to 10 tefachim, or whatever that X is, that's what you have to be chokek lahashlim. So again, as we said yesterday, if the korah is at 9 tefachim height, you're missing 1 tefach, it's got to be 10 tefachim high, so you'll dig 1 tefach. So what are you asking me, kama? The whole question is ridiculous. So now the Gemara backtracks and reinterprets the question, kama. Ella, mishcho bekama. In other words, how wide does the chakak have to be? Now let's see if I can describe this to you, right? Because again, if you have the picture, it's a little clearer. But what happens is that let's assume that this hand of mine, you see that hand? Shake your head if you see the hand, you know. Nobody sees it?
Yes.
Yeah, you see it, okay? So this hand represents the Pesach HaMavui. So here's Rosh Hashanah behind the hand. People are coming into the mavui, and here's where they go in. Now we have to depress the land so that the korah will be at a height of 10 tefachim. So now the question is, how far do we have to go into the mavui? Right, there's the width of the mavui, and we have to flatten out this land. How far do we have to go in? That's going to be machlokas between Rav Yosef and Abaye. Rav Yosef is going to do the mekil, and he's going to say all you need is 4 tefachim, and Abai is going to say, no, we have to pave a ground that's 4 amos in length. Again, we call it width. Don't be confused here. In a sense, we're talking about the length of the mavui, whether it's going to be arba tefachim or it's going to be arba amos, correct? The length of the mavui. But when we use the word rochav here, what we mean is that we're going from one side of the kosel to the other side of the kosel. And how much is that area? You know, so your arrows are going to be, you're going to be north and south, if you know what I mean, not east and west. But we call it rochav because we want to know how far do we have to extend this rochav of the depressed ground into the mavui. Is it enough that we flatten the first 4 tefachim of the mavui, which is a very short area, that's Rav Yosef? Or no, we have to flatten 4 amos going into the mavui. And that's going to be Abaye Shita. So Rav Yosef Amar bi arba tefachim, v'Abaye Amar bi arba amos. So now, the Gemara is going to analyze what is this machlokis. And the Gemara is going to suggest that maybe Rav Yosef accepted a certain principle that we're about to see about what's called a Mavui Shen Nifratz. You write that down, Mavui Shen Nifratz. If I had a whiteboard, that's what I would write, because that's the subject of our next discussion. And we're going to have a statement of Rav Ami and Rav Asi formulating a principle about a Mavui Shen Nifratz. Rav Yosef, the Gemara thinks, accepted that principle, and Abai rejected it. The Gemara later on is going to say that even Abai accepted that principle, but he had a twist on it. So, Lema bidder Ravi Ami, Ravi Asi, Ka Miflagi. These were two great scholars. They were very, very close colleagues. They were both students of Rabbi Yochanan. Anyway, should we say, the Gemara says, that the machlokas between Rabbi Yosef and Abai revolves around whether or not we should accept this rule, this principle of Rav Ami Rav Asi? And as we said yesterday, I must reiterate this point. What Rav Yosef and Rab and Abai are arguing about is what's called the shear of a mavui. What do I mean? A mavui, insofar as it's set aside as an independent rishus, so to speak, independent of rishus or rabim, it has to have a certain minimum size. In other words, until now, we've been discussing, you know, the korah and how high the korah is and how low the korah is and so forth and so on. But let's talk about the mavui itself. The mavui itself has to have a minimum length. And this concept of chokakin lahashlim, where we're going to pave, we're going to flatten out the ground at the beginning of the mavui, that's going to create a mavui unto itself, which is depressed enough so that the korah will be now 10 tefachim high. But that area that we're flattening, well, what do you call those machines? You know those big caterpillar machines that have the rollers, you know, they pave the ground, you know, I don't know what the actual word for that machine is. So we're gonna bring in these rollers and we're gonna flatten the ground. The area that we flatten has to be a mavui. So whatever you decide is the minimum size of a mavui, that's the area that has to be flattened. Once we flatten that mavui, and we have a mavui, which according to Rav Yosef is going to be 4 tefachim, that's already enough of an area to establish a mavui, then we have a korah. Once we have a korah, we can use that korah to be mata the entire mavui, even that part of the mavui that's not depressed. And even if on the end of the mavui, or the middle of the mavui, after this, the first mavui, even though there, you know, vis-a-vis that area, the korah is below 10 tefachim, it doesn't matter, because we've already created a mavui, so we've activated that korah. You know, it's like a battery. You know, we put a battery into the korah. Once we put a battery into the korah, then we can be mata the entire mavui. So now we have to determine what's the minimum shear of a mavui. And Rav Yosef is going to claim that the minimum shear of a mavui is 4 tefachim. And he's going to derive this from a principle called Mavui Shen Nifratz. The Itmar, we learned in Abbeis Medrash, Mavui Shen Nifratz. It means, now it says Mitzido. Mitzido means every Mavui has three walls, correct? There's the wall at the end of the Mavui. And then you have two walls on the right and the left. Mitzido means one of those side walls. It doesn't matter which one, the one on the right, the one on the left. You know, you go into the mavui, there's one on the right. So we'll you know, the picture he has here is that it's the one on the right. What difference it make? So nifritza. So that kosel is now broken. Nifritza means, you know, a bunch of, you know, bulls came charging down, you know, after a bullfight in Spain, and they banged down the wall. So there's now a big hole in the wall. When you have a hole in the wall, you've got the first part of the wall. Again, when I say first part, it's always the beginning of the mavui, the Pesach HaMavui. So you have on your right side of the Pesach HaMavui a pas. Pas means it's a short kosel. Then you have a pirtza, a great opening. And then you have the rest of that kosel. Klape Rosho means very close to the Pesach HaMavu, to the opening of the Mavu. The opening of the Mavu is where the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim goes into the Mavu. Very close, not far into the Mavu, you've got Nifritzah Kosa. So you're left with a small amount of Kosa. Again, that small amount of Kosa past the Pirtza will connect with a much larger Kosa, right? But here we have a Pirtza. So how large is this area of a kosel that still stands? That's called a pas. So Itmar Mishmei de Rabbi Ami Rav Asi. Here's we have the principle of Rabbi Ami Rav Asi. Im Yesham pas arbot fachim. In other words, if from the beginning of the kosel you still have a kosel that extends for four tfachim until it gets to the pirtza, is matir bepirtza ad eser. There are two variables here. We're going to have a ratio, so to speak, between the two. It's going to be four tfachim to 10 amos. What do I mean, four tfachim to 10 amos? The pirtza itself that separates the pas from the end of the kosel, that pirtza is 10 amos. If that pirtza is as wide as 10 amos, which is very profound, then I need a pas of 4 tfachim. So the ratio is 4 tfachim to a pirtza of 10 amos. V'im lav, what happens if you have a smaller pas, the kosel to your right, as you had that standing, then you have to have a smaller pirtza. So for example, v'im lav, you don't have a pas of 4 tfachim, is then pachos mishlosha matir. Wow. Things have really changed now. Shlosha eino matir. What that means is that now there's basically a 1-to-1 ratio between the pas and the pirtza in order to be matir, in order for that korah to be mat to the movi. Let me explain what I mean by 1-to-1. In the first case, we have a pas of 4 tfachim. The pirtza is 10 amos. Now an amma gdola, has 6 tfachim. You're talking about 10 amos, you're talking about 60 tfachim. The pas is only 4 tfachim. So I don't know, you do a quick mathematical ratio, 4 to 60. 4 into 60 is like 24. It's like 1 over 24. You know, something like that. It's a very small ratio. And why is that? Because that pas already sets up an area which is a mavui into itself. Why? Because how much of that mavui is, so to speak, protected or surrounded by that pas, by that, you know, broken wall? 4 tfachim. That's where Rav Yosef is going to come up with his shita, that all you need for a mavui is 4 tfachim. So basically I have a mavui already, but I have a pirtza, and now all I need is to somehow connect my pas, that broken small kosel, with the kosel down there. That we could do even as far as eser amos. So let me read to you the Hebrew translation. He says, pas arba tfachim mirosh hakosel shalav munachas hakorah ad hapirtza. So he has a pas of 4 tfachim from the beginning of the wall until the end of the wall, until it breaks, until the opening, is matir bepirtza ad eser. If the pirtza, right, the opening between the first pas and the rest of the kosel is up to, but not beyond, eser amos, then we could be matir the mavui based on the korah at the beginning of the mavui, because that korah is functioning for an area that's 4 tfachim, right? Because you have a mavui of 4 tfachim. What do I mean a mavui of 4 tfachim? You've got 4 tfachim of ground which is surrounded by the two ksolim, right? Because the pas is 4 tfachim in length. So therefore, since you have a shear of an orech of a mavui, the length of a mavui, length I mean to say when you go into the mavui, you have 4 tfachim in front of you. And now those four tfachim, which themselves, I'm explaining Rav Yosef's understanding of this principle, is itself a mavui. Now the korah can serve for that mavui, because the korah is related now to a mavui. And what is that mavui? It's four tfachim. It's therefore, once the mavui is a mavui, the korah is a korah, and the korah now is valid, and it's matir the mavui. Is then the piritza, since it's not more than 10 amos, is considered like an opening, like a Pesach. V'eino poselis es hamavui. Okay, now let's understand what he means, that the piritza equals a Pesach. Okay, that's a new equation which we didn't mention yesterday. There are many different entrances to a mavui. We've been talking about Rosh HaMavui, you know, that entrance coming from Rosh HaSarabim into this mavui. And in our minds, we imagine that the mavui has two ksalim, two walls, that take you from the beginning of the mavui to the end of the mavui, till you hit that brick wall at the end of the mavui. That's not so. Because keep in mind, there are many houses on both sides of the mavui that spill into various courtyards, chatzeros, and from those courtyards they spill into this mavui. The mavui could be very, very long. So there are many, many openings in the mavui. Now, there are two halachas that sound identical, but they're fundamentally different. Two terms, and we have to differentiate. One term is called a Pesach, and the other term is called a Pirtza. A piritza could be considered a Pesach. What does that mean? That means, I'm looking for that word in English, it's innocuous. Oh, that's the word I was looking for. If you convert a piritza into a Pesach, it's innocuous. What do I mean? It doesn't bother me, ki uzeh, because a mavui has many, many different psachim. There are many different entrance ways and gates into the mavui. A mavui could have an endless number of gates. There's no limited amount. But a piritza is a problem, because a piritza already sets aside the beginning of the mavui where there is a pas with the end of the mavui because of this piritza. What we have to do to salvage the mavui and to connect the beginning of the mavui with the end of the mavui is we have to transform the piritza into what? Into a Pesach. What allows me to do so? Pachos mi eser amos. If the piritza is less than 10 amos, then I define it as a Pesach. Again, it's like a joke. It's like a game we're playing. The Chachamim set up these shiurim. You know, we're not going to argue with them. We can only ask why or what basis they did so. But the... Right? Yeah. Don? I don't see you, but I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So if it becomes another Pesach, which is an opening, right?
Right. It's like a gate. It's a gateway.
Then why doesn't it have to have its own Korah?
Because again, one Mavui could have many Pesachim. It's not that every Pesach needs its own Korah. Every Pesach is just a way in which I get into the Mavui. Once I'm into the Mavui, I need one Korah that's marked to the entire Mavui. Now what allows me to convert that Pesach, I'm sorry, that Pirtza, into a Pesach and call it another entrance into the mavui?
Yeah, but aren't all the other entrances into the mavui from Chatzarot? This is from the Rishut Rabin.
No, not really. Again, I don't know, Don. Do you have this picture that you hopefully got in the email?
Yes.
So if you'll take a look at the picture, it's called Siyur Bet. It's on the left side of page Hey Bet. So you'll see that the Korah, right, which is on your left, do you see that brown beam? That's your Korah, right? So that's at the beginning of the Mavui, where the Rabbim are coming in. And immediately to your right, as you enter into the Mavui, you have this pass. The minimum size of the pass at this point is 4 Tfachim, because we have a Piritza. And a Piritza is a problem unless you have a pass of 4 Tfachim. Now, do you see there's an arrow that defines the piritza as 10 amos, meaning it's less than 10 amos? That pirtza, you see, he even showed you like there are cracks in the kosel, you know, on the side. There's like a break in the kosel. And that pirtza, if you would, you know, if you were standing in front of the pirtza outside, that becomes a pesach into the mavui. Do you follow? So the rabim is that black area that he shades off. And then you have this, what color is it? I don't know, some sort of light green or light blue, whatever it is there. You know, it's whitish. That color represents the Bnei HaChatzer. Right? You're only seeing the houses on the left side, but you have to imagine that there's a row of houses on the right side. Like, for example, in Tzir Aleph, do you see on the right page, on the right diagram, he's got Batim on both sides of the coastal, right?
Right.
So imagine in Seir Bays that those, you know, we didn't remove those batim. They don't appear in the diagram, but thank God those batim are still alive and well. So the people from those batim on the right are entering into the Mavui through that pirtza. And that pirtza now becomes a Pesach. But let's be honest. At what point do you finally get to the... It becomes ad absurdum. And people from the Shesarabim will just go around this little, you know, this little pass of four tvachim, and they'll go through the pirtza. So it's not just the pirtza that functions for the houses, that row of houses that border on the mavui, but this pirtza becomes a pirtza for the Bnei Shesarabim. And the answer is, now the pirtza has to be a little bit more limited. If it's a little more limited, it's very convenient for the Bnei HaChatzer, you know, for those batim to go into this pirtza. But it's too tight for the rabim to make this whole sivuv, you know, come all the way around and go through the pirtza. Again, that's the theory of it. You know, again, you know, it gets sticky when you apply it in reality, but the concept is that as long as that pirtza is less than 10 amos, then we view it as a Pesach. And again, as I said, you can have many, many different openings to a mav. In fact, in the picture on the right, and even in the picture on the left, you'll see a bunch of openings into the mav. But what's absolutely common to all these openings is that they are less than 10 tefachim wide, 10 amos wide. As long as there's no distance of 10 amah from one kosel to the hemshech, the continuation of that kosel, then we can view it and define it as a Pesach. Okay, now you told me the pirtz is a Pesach. You're still rounding the bases here. You haven't come to home plate yet. Why? Because you need a mavui. And to have a mavui with a heta korah, you need a relationship between the korah and the mavui. That's impossible, because the korah is only 9 tefachim high. That korah can't function. So the answer is we depress the ground. How much of an area has to be depressed? And the answer is we have a pas, which is 4 tefachim. Then if we depress the 4 tefachim, what happens is that kosel now becomes the kosel of this mini mavui. I like that word, mini mavui. We have a mini mavui within a larger mavui. And what is that mini mavui? It's 4 tefachim. Had Rav Yosef know that 4 tefachim, which is a tiny, tiny area, is enough to be considered a mini mavui? The answer is, because as far as pirtza is concerned, once we convert that pirtza into a pesach, which we could do because the pirtza is less than 10 amos, now we can be mati the mavui because we have a kosel, which is called a pas, of 4 tefachim. The fact that Rav Ami and Rav Asi say that the pas only has to be 4 tefachim in length means that that itself becomes a mavui, because it circumscribes, so to speak, it circles an area of 4 tefachim. So Rav Yosef says, if that area 4 tefachim is enough to be considered a mavui, because the Rav Ami and Rav Asi say that the pas is only a 4 tefachim pas, and as we said before, it separates an area of 4 tefachim, says Rav Yosef, then in the laws of Chokkin Lahashlim, to depress the ground, all we have to do is depress enough ground that will create a mavui, our mini mavui of 4 tefachim. Now what happens if the pas is less than 4 amos? Let's say it's 3 amos. What happens if the pas is less than 4 tefachim? Let's say it's only 3 tefach. Now the ratio changes radically, drastically. We get to almost a 1-to-1 ratio. The pirtza now, because the pas is so small, has to be a very small pirtza. And how much is that pirtza? That pirtza has to be less than 3 tefach. It's mamish a 1-to-1 ratio. In my case, where the pas is 3 tefachim, the pirtza is only 3 tefachim. Now, what does that mean? The shorter the pas, the more convenient it is for the rabbim to go into the pirtza. Because really, there's what's separating the rabbim from the pirtza? A teeny little kosel? I mean, you blink and then it's gone. You know what I'm saying? So the rabbim go in there. It's no longer a Pesach of a Mavud. So it's interesting. When you want to convert a Pirtz into a Pesach, you have to take into consideration two different variables. It's not enough to say, well, what's the size of the Pirtz? At what point can we say, well, it's not a Pirtz, it's only a Pesach. It's only another opening. You have to take into consideration another variable. And that is the size of your pas, the size of your kosel. Why? Because the smaller the kosel is, the less I consider that pirtza a Pesach. Because who are you fooling? It's just as easy to imagine that the batim are streaming in through this opening, and we call it a Pesach Hamavui. At some point, it's all just the extension of Rishus HaRabim, because the pas is so small that the Rabim just they have two ways of going in here. They can go this way, they can go that way. I mean, there's nothing. It's like a pillar. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to our place in Rabbi Meir, you know, in Katama. We have this pillar, you know, in the middle of our living room. So my wife says that she got the okay from an engineer to remove that pillar. It's just like a, you know, an eyesore. 50,000 shekel. That's how complicated it is for an engineer, because that pillar is like holding up the ceiling, you know what I'm saying? So he's got to build the whole thing and then take off the pillar. It's a ganze meisa. Anyway, so imagine a pillar in the middle of your living room. And on the left side of the pillar, you know, you have a fridge. You know, on the right side, you have a couch. You know, so the pillar is in the middle of your living room, right? So there are two ways of getting into your kitchen. You know, you could either go around this way to the right of the pillar or go to the left of the pillar. I mean, what difference does it make? The pillar is such a small area. It doesn't confine you in any way. So this pillar, so to speak, is our pas. I mean, in the mashal, it's not exactly, right? He says, Sholosh, if the pirtz is now 3 tefachim and the pas is 3 tefachim, ain't no matir. You can't be matir this mavui with a korah. He says, Kevan sheicholim b'nei ha-mavui lekatzer es darcham derech ha-pirtza, is yesh lachush, shema yazvu b'nei ha-mavui es ha-pesach ha-rogil shel ha-mavui, v'yelchu derech ha-pirtza, v'pesach ha-rishon lo yichoshev yoser pesach ha-movui. Alright, he's quoting Rishonim. I was interpreting the Gemara on my own without the Rishonim. I would still push for my approach that, you know, at some point it's ridiculous to call this a Pesach of the Movui, because everybody, whether you're in the Batim and you want the Mavui to service you, or whether or not you're in the Rishus HaRabim going into this Mavui, both are the same. You know, you're going to go through this pirtza because the pas is so narrow. And if that be the case, the original Pesach of the Mavui, where the Korah is on top, is no longer functions in a very unique way as the Pesach of the Mavui, because, you know, either that's the Pesach of the Mavui, or maybe the Pirtz is considered the Pesach of the Mavui. I mean, my Umi, hi, me, hi. Why is one Pesach better than the other? So you want to say the Korah on top of the Pesach is going to be Mati the Mavu. Yeah, well, what do you mean? Is the Korah on top of the Pesach? There's another Pesach here. And those two Pesachim are both at the beginning of the Mavu. So, you know, my Umei Hai Mihai. He writes here, Hikshar Rashba, I'm just going to quickly read a footnote here. He says, "Im tama psul bishum sheyelchu bnei amovu derech apirtzav yisbatol mipesach amovu shem pesach im kein afim nishar sham pasar ba adayin yesh lachush sheyelchu bnei amovu derech apirtzav yisbatol pesach amovu." So let's just see if the Rashba, I'm hoping, saying a special prayer that the Rashba is going to say like I said. He says, "Bira Rashba shetama psul bishum shetzorach shetia kora munachas." Agabe kosle mavui. The kol sheyesham pirtza yosem ishlosha. Mashenisha mea kosel, hu kosel bifnei atzmo. Mishum kachim yeshwa arba tfachim, shushir mavui akora munachas al kosle ha mavui. But if ein barba tfachim, ein akora munachas al kosle mavui. Because the pirtz is more than three, and the kosel is not a kosel mavui, but rather a kosel bifnei atzmo. So just to summarize the Rashba says that there are two definitions of a kosel. One is called the kosel mavui, and the other is called a kosel bifnei atzma, which is independent, so to speak, has a life of its own. And the nafkamina is going to be the korah. Why? Because the korah could only be matir the mavui if the korah is sitting on a kosel of the mavui. So we have two categories of a kosel according to the Rashba. We have a kosel of a mavui, and then we have a kosel unto itself. Whatever purpose it functions, you know, we'll come to some decision about it. And the nafkamina is if the korah is sitting on the kosel, right? The korah is really stretched over two ksolim. Those two ksolim have to be what's called kosley hamavui. So he says the following, that if the piritza becomes a serious piritza, then that kosel, when you go into that piritza, which is on your left, is a kosel bifnei atzmo. It's no longer the kosel the mavui, because now you have. So I'm not sure how this works in the Rashba. I'm just thinking out loud. Since you have now another pesach hamavui, just one second. Tama psul mishum shetzorch shetei akora munachas agabe. In quotation marks, kosle amavui. The kol sheyesh from pirtza yosem ishlosha. Mashe nishar mea kosel. Right, the kosel itself is very short right now. It's less than four tefachim, right? Is hu kosel bifnei atzma. It's not a kosel amavui. And therefore the korah is not sitting on a kosel amavui. Umishum kach im yesh bar bat fachim shehu shir mavui hare akora munachas al kosle ha mavui. But im ein shamar bat fachim is ein akora munachas al kosle mavui.
The pirtza is breaking the kosel into two parts. One of them is no longer part of the mavui.
That's what That's the basic sketch. I mean, again, I can't tell you, Jerry, all the nitty-gritty details. I don't know that there are nuances here which I don't understand. But bigadol, as we say, that's what the Rashba is saying. That as a result of the piritza, the kosel becomes like an entity unto itself. It's almost like the kosel is serving the piritza, so to speak. It's no longer connected to the mavui. And therefore the korah is not sitting on a kosel amavui, it's sitting on what he calls the Rashba kosel bifnei atzmo. So there's a long footnote here. I'm just sort of skimming it to see if somebody says what I say, that the The Bnei Rishus HaRabim are going to enter into that area. Let me just see. If you don't mind, I'm just skimming it. He says, you have it actually in your photocopy, in your attachment to an email, if you want to see. It's footnote number Yud Ches. He says, V'arit v'yishev das Rashi, sha'af Rashi modeh, she'kol shalom nishar pas arbot fochim, yesh bo chison she'en akor al gabi mavui, elo she'sovar Rashi, she'be mavui, she'hoye kosher v'nifsal, ein lifsal v'kachas ha mavui, kol od she'meshamech pesach zeh, lePesach haMavui, sheisham heker koral and achnosim viyotzim shaMavui, hoya kvar kosher is dai biyechem mishnei dvarim. Oshiye heker mitzad etzem haKorah, oshiye heker mahnichnosim viyotzim bePesach. So the Ritva is introducing another variable into this equation, as if we don't have enough on our plate. The Ritva says that there are two types of heker. Right? We said that the Korah has to serve as a heker. So he says, to whom is it serving as a heker? To those who are entering into the Mavui, and they see the Korah, or for those who are going in and out of the Mavui. In other words, there are those who are in the Batim, and they go into the Mavui. Is it enough that they see the Korah? Or maybe all we need is a Heker for what he calls the Nichnasim V'yotzim, those who go through the main entrance of the Mavui. And he says that if the Pirtza is very narrow, right, we're talking about Shlosha Tfachim, then that's not going to be comfortable for the Bnei HaMavui to go in there. It's too tight. And now the issue is, can the Korah serve as a Heker, not for the people who are going into the Mavui from their homes, because they're not going to go through that Pirtza, but rather the Korah could serve as a Heker for the Nichnasim V'yotzim. But Yesh Lachu Shelo Yelchu Bnei HaMavui Derech Pesach Zeh. We're afraid that those who live, you know, they border on the Mavui, their homes border on the Mavui, they're not going to go through this Pesach. V'yaz lo ye klal heker b'kora. So I get the impression from the Ritva, again you have to work out the details, that those who go into the Mavui straight in through the main Pesach, they'll see the Korah. But the Bnei HaMavui piling in from their homes into the Mavui, they won't even see that, because they can't go through that Pesach HaMavui, which is the Pirtza, because it's a very narrow Pirtza. I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas which maybe later on we'll be able to piece these together.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi Art Scroll talks about that.
Yeah, can you read it to me? Because I don't have access to an Art Scroll. If I would ever get back to the LC, I would grab the Art Scroll. But I haven't been out of my house in a while. Yeah, go ahead.
It says, three tefachim is the smallest interruption in a wall that can be legally classified as an opening or breach. Then in parentheses it says, because if it's less than three tefachim, it's considered a lavud. Since some of the Mavoi's traffic will use this breach in the side wall as a shortcut to enter and exit the Mavoi, that breach is viewed as an alternate entrance in the status of the front side, as the Mavoi's entrance is thereby diminished. The front lost its status as the entranceway, in turn causes the Korah that is placed there to become invalid, since the rabbis allowed a Korah only as an enclosure from Mavoi's entranceway and not from any other opening.
I suspect that he's working with the Rajba. That's what I think. Does he quote?
He quotes Rashi and Ritva. He also quotes the Ritva.
He doesn't mention the Rashba.
Right.
Gonyakov. Yeah. So yeah, let me ask you just one question here, because I'd have to read that over a few times, Don. You have any way of scanning that and sending it to me in an email?
Yes.
You do? Wow. I'm thrilled. What I would ask you to...
I think so.
Okay, no, I'm not asking you to sign a document here, but do me a favor.
Yes.
And again, I don't want to impose on you, but if it works out, send me like a few pages, starting with that page that you read me. I don't need the Gemara that I have. All I need is the footnotes, really. You know, if you want to send me the whole page of the Gemara with the notes, that's also better. That's even better. But if you can give me, like, you know, over Shabbos, I want to keep myself busy and get a little bit of ahead of where we're up to. If you can send me an email with a couple of pages, I'll print them out here on my printer, you know.
I will try.
Because I don't know if you understood what you read. I didn't understand. It was very complicated.
no question.
You know, I mean, you admit that again, I don't blame Art Scroll. You know, they didn't write the text. They're just trying to make this text understandable. You know, I was always afraid of Masechta Erev, and now I understand why. Until now, my head was above water, but now I'm beginning to sink a little bit, you know. So I'm reaching out for a life buoy, you know. And
after the shiur yesterday, I spent an hour reviewing and going over this, because I really, conceptually, I couldn't keep it in my head, you know. Because, like you started saying, the whole idea is that the pirtza starts being used by the general public as an entranceway.
Right.
So it's not that it's so to me, it becomes, they're using terms, they're throwing the terms around, it means several different things at the same time, the same term.
Because I'll tell you what it is. The Bala Shas, you know, Ravina Ravashi, when they edited the Shas, they knew all of Masechta Erev, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a pedagogical issue. How do you teach something when you have to know everything in order to know anything? You know, it's really complicated. That's why I think, you know, in order to be very comfortable with Erevin, or at least certain parts of Erevin, I'm not saying everything, you know, the last thing that we had about Shiurin and Chatzitzin, I mean, I felt very comfortable, but this is really already, we're getting into heavy Erevin. I mean, this first parak is called Mavui, and this entire chapter is dedicated to a Mavui, and you and I would have said, Mavui, you know, big deal, you know, put up a Korah and go to sleep and don't bother me, you know what I'm saying? But we really begin to see how complicated a Mavui is. You know, it's got the Korah, and it's got the Shir, and it's got the Kosel, and it's got the Pirtz. I mean, we're being flooded here by terminology from we're being bombarded here by terminology from, you know, who has to see the Korah now, the Ritva's asking? You know, is it the Bnei HaMavui? Is it the people who are going into the Mavui? You know what I'm saying? And the Rashba wants to know what's considered a kosel mavui and what's a kosel bifnei atzmo. I get a whole new terminology here. And is the Korah sitting on this kosel or sitting on that kosel? Is there a relationship between this kosel and the other? And in the middle of all this, we have a sugya called Chokikin Lahashlim, where the Korah is too low and we have to depress the ground. So I hope you don't mind I'm crying on your shoulders over here. It taint poshut, as we would say. This is not simple stuff. So it could be that if I use both the Masifta and the Art Scroll, I might be able to come up with some pedagogical way of understanding it and then transmitting it to you. A lot of different terms here, a lot of different concepts. We finally hit, you know, we hit the fan, as you'd say, as far as Erevin is concerned. You know, we've been playing like nice games until now. You know, a sukkah with schach that's too high, and a mavui, and a sukkah, and doraisis. And then we spoke about different kinds of amos. There's an ama gedola, an ama ketana, there's ama sochakos, and ama satsevos. I mean, you know, all this stuff was like easy street. But now we're getting to some more heavy issues. And I'm just hoping that some of these diagrams are accessible to you. Yechiel tried to send them to you in an email. I don't know if he was successful or not. Art School has its own diagrams, I'm sure, but Rashi has diagrams on this Gemara. Did you see? Rashi has three diagrams. Tosus has another two diagrams. The Rishonim already were using diagrams. Yeah, this is not something for the 21st century. But these are very sophisticated computer generated diagrams, you know, with colored pictures and you know, houses with roofs, and they're like 14 different colors here. Anyway, so let's just, again, we have about 10 minutes left. Let's just try, you know, v'siyata d'shmaya, just to plow through. And even if we get to the point where we have a little bit of familiarity with the terminology, that's the beginning, because again, this is a lifelong endeavor. All right. Amalecha Abaye. I'm sorry, where are we up to? So the Gemara says the following. L'Rav Yosef Islay D'Rav Ami V'Rav Asi, I'm adding those two words. It means that if the pas that's left over has four tfachim, then even if the piritza is up to 10 amos wide, then the korah is mater the mavui. And the reason for that is that that pas, as we said before, circumscribes an area in the mavui which is four tfachim. That means that four tfachim is the shear of a mavui. Labai lesle de Rav Ami v'Rav Asi. At this point, the Gemara presents the following view, that according to Abaye, you need a pas of four amos. That it means as you enter into the mavui, what you have on your right side is a kosel that extends for four amos, and then the piritza starts. And now you have four amos, it means the four amos area is going to define your mavui, so such that the korah now is matir mavui. So you need four amos for a mavui. That's the minimum size of a mavui. That's how the Gemara understands Abaye now. And therefore Abaye says in Chokikin Lahashlim, you could only salvage that korah, which is less than 10 tvachim high, if you depress an area which could be and qualifies as a mavui, and that's four amos. Amalecha Abaye. Abaye says the following. You know what? I also could accept Rav Ami and Rav Asi. Hasam, there in the case of Pirtza, right? What do we call it? We called it Mavui Shenifrats. Is there Sof Mavui? Hacha Tchilas Mavui. Sof Mavui means, very interesting, that you had a Mavui and then the Piritza happened. So at one point in time, the Korah had batteries in it. It was a functioning Korah. It was Mati the Mavui. It's easier to recreate something that existed than to create something ex nihilo that never existed. When we have a korah that's less than 10 tvachim high, that korah never had batteries in it. You know, it would be like if I showed you this and I took out the batteries. It's worthless. So now I want to create a korah that's valid, that's not a korah. Says Abaye, it's much more difficult to create a korah than to resurrect a korah from the dead. This korah in Rav Ami v'Rav Asi, which is Nifritza, was once a korah kosher before the piritza happened. And that's called Sof Mavui. Again, we're introducing a whole new terminology here, once again. Sof Mavui means Mavui Shahaya Kosher V'Nifsal. Is then Rav Ami or Rav Asi say, you know what? All we need is four tfachim in order to regenerate the status of a Mavui and to activate the Korah to be Mater that Mavui. All we need is four tfachim, because that's called Sof Mavui. But both say, what should I tell you? It's almost as if what happened is that you had a mavui with a korah, and you put a gish, you put a gespanka, I don't know how to call this in English, you know, you put a seal on it. And that seal, for temporary reasons, can no longer be legally binding because now we have a piritza. Ah, so now we want to salvage that korah. To salvage that korah, we need a pas of 4 tefachim. Hacha, but here, in a case of a korah that's less than 10 tefachim high, tchilas mavui. It means we have to create a mavui with a korah. Klomar, I'm reading the Hebrew. Shahaya hamavui pasul mitchilaso. Well, what do you mean psul mavui? Psul mavui means that the korah can't function for this mavui. The achshav kshachokek bo hareyu tchilas asiyoso. I would have written tchilas hechshero. That's how I would have written it. Then says Abaye iika arba amos in. The ilo, lo. Then we certainly need to have an area of 4 amos within which we have a korah that's 10 amos, that's 10 tfachim high in that area of 4 amos. And now we can generate a mavui and a korah, because we have a korah that's 10 tefachim high, we have a mavui that's 4 amos in its length. But we still don't know where this 4 amos comes from. Where did it fall from the heaven? Where do we get this shear of 4 amos? And 4 tefachim is not enough. The sanya we learned in the brisa, ein mavui nitar belechi v'korah, lechi or korah, ad sheyu batim v'chatzeros psuchim l'tocho. Right, these are the basics. This we know. This is called the aleph base. We need that there are batim that spill into chatzeros, the chatzeros spill into the mavui, and then we can be matir the mavui with a lechi or a korah. Now, take a look at the braisa. The braisa says chatzeros in the plural. The minimum of a plural is always 2. Every chatzer has to have batim, which means it has to have a minimum of 2 houses. So 2 houses that enter into a chatzer, a common chatzer, and 2 chatzeros that spill into a common mavui. Then the braisa says, that's the end of the braisa. Comes along Abai and he says, V'i b'arba. If you're going to tell me that the mavui has 4 tefachim, that's the whole mavui is 4 tefachim, heichi mishkachesle. How could it be, he says, that 2 chatzeros spill into a mavui that has 4 tefachim? Right? The opening into this mavui, if it's only 4 tefachim, is going to be 4 tefachim in width. That could be a Pesach for 2 chatzeros. There are 2 chatzeros that serve a minimum of 2 batim each. And that they're going to go through a Pesach that is 4 tefachim? That's not possible. Lo nitan liftoach Pesach shel arba tefachim. You can't open a Pesach for 2 chatzeros into an area that's so narrow that it's 4 tefachim. Now at this point, he tells you to look at diagram number 3. Oh, here's diagram number 3 on the right side. So you've got 4 tefachim. Now, what does he mean when he picks up that kosel there? He's just trying to show you maybe what's behind the kosel. And 4 tefachim. So what this is what I want to leave for Bli Neder for Yom Rishon. Try to figure out what is the logic here of Abaye to prove that 4 tefachim could not possibly be a Pesach for a Mavui to serve two Chatzeros. He says, Lo nitan liftoach Pesach shal arbot fachim shetimtza shiyu poschim shtei Chatzeros lemavui zeh v'kol Pesach eno rochav arbot fachim v'eno nechshav lepesach hamov. He says it's impossible to consider this as a Pesach. If the Mavu is Arko Arbot Fochim, that means that the Pesach would be Arbot Fochim. Is Lo Nitan Liftoach Pesach Shal Arbot Fochim. Can't be a Pesach of four Tfochim.
So that wall in front?
Yeah.
That's pushed back four Tfochim.
Oh!
The get out is through that fourth plug in that little space.
Oh, I see. It was a trick of the eye. I thought that that wall was being lifted up. No, you're saying the wall is pushed in. It's pushed in four tefachim. But I don't understand. Is there actually such a wall, or we're just imagining that there would be a wall there? Hari milvad chalala Pesach.
Now it's actually there. There's like a little separation between everything, between the two batim. Then it comes to that wall, and then they only have the four tefachim on each side to get out into the Rishus HaRabim.
Oh, I see. So there's airspace here. Oh, I see. So there's an airspace, a separation of four tefachim. You have to really see this with a fine eye here. He has a slightly different color there, which is the same color as the ground in front of the batim. And that's really airspace. So the Pesach HaMavui is through those four tefachim. But I don't understand. I'm reading one line here which I don't really comprehend. I'll read it again. I don't want to keep you because I think we're over time. But he writes here, Lo nitan liftoach Pesach shal arbot fachim shari milvad chalala Pesach tzorkam mokom limezuzas ha-Pesach. I don't know what he means by mezuzas ha-Pesach. V'imkein bi'af echad mikosle ha-orech shal mavui lo yochol Leos Afilu Chotzer Achas. Okay, I'll have to read this over a few times. Somehow Abai concludes that it's impossible for two Chatzeros to pour into this Pesach of four Tefach. Okay.
Rabbi Berza,
yes.
Since we don't use these letters Erev and Erev Shabbos, what do you think about the idea of Daf Yomi followed by a Parsha Shir?
For tomorrow. Let me think about it. I mean, I don't want to commit myself. I'll find out what's going on here, and I'll try to get back to you.